with youth that you're working with, or places where you're speaking, what do you think is the question that you get the most?
What happened to your dreadlocks? No.
Hi, I'm Lisa DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. Today, my guest is Shane Claiborne. After college, he and a few friends founded a community called The Simple Way, and they settled in one of the worst, most impoverished areas of Philadelphia. Shane is an author of the book The Irresistible Revolution, Living as an Ordinary Radical, and he is tapped to speak all over the country and all over the world, trying to forward his message of being the hands and feet of Jesus in whatever situation we find ourselves in. I welcome him to the show, and I hope you enjoy it. Special thanks today on this episode to Evangelical Seminary. You can find Evangelical Seminary at evangelical.edu. They will be hosting Shane on July 20th, and you can still get tickets or tickets at the door. They're located in Myerstown, PA, and they're also my alma mater where I studied spiritual formation. Along with spiritual formation and spiritual direction, there is also a Master of Divinity for Pastoral Studies and Ministry, and a Master of Leadership Development, which is fantastic in many settings. Another program they have that has gotten a lot of attention is the Counseling Marriage and Family Therapy Program, which also it helps people in many different situations and settings. So I encourage you to check them out.
Yeah, so good to talk to you.
Yes, you too. I'm really looking forward to coming to see you a week from today. You're crisscrossing the whole country, but you'll be in Myerstown at my alma mater, Evangelical Seminary, and I'm excited to hear you in person too.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm. I know this was kind of my attempt to sort of whet people's appetite for locally for in my own way, not so much the school's idea, but I was excited that you were coming, and also wanted to give people a little bit of a taste of what you're going to be talking about, and also dive into a little bit of new monasticism and what it looks like in your context too.
Okay, good. Yeah, let's dive right in, because Christine may have told you I'm at a really big, crazy event here with 6,000 young people, so it's a pretty little chaotic. So let's dive right in then. Is that okay?
Sounds great.
And I've got about a half hour, and then we can do another one when I'm out there if you want to or something.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. Yeah. So anyway, you got started right after college, starting a community, The Simple Way, and I've been kind of curious as to know what's made it last that long, because you're beyond that sort of the idealism of your 20s, and you're into this new phase of your life, and you've done a lot in the community. And I know that sometimes communal living can be hard for people, and I was kind of wanting to know what has sustained you through all these years.
Yeah, we always say community would be so easy if it weren't for all the people, you know. But I think a couple of things to really have helped us. One of those is that we haven't been as attached to a certain form or expression of community as we have been really trying to choose to love each other and to love Jesus well and allow community to flow out of that. And Bonhoeffer, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, had a great line. He said, if you're just in love with your vision for community, you'll actually destroy it. But if your community flows out of your love for each other, then your community will last, you know. And I think that's what we've really tried to do. And over the years, community, you know, it started as a bunch of 20-year-olds moving into a row house together, you know, and sleeping with a dozen of us with one bathroom on floors and you know, hallways, and And now we've got a little bit more of a village that we've built with, a, you know, 10 or 20 houses all kind of in the same neighborhood and gardens and things. So it's community with a little bit more elbow room. And I think that's beautiful because it's really built community with a lot of the indigenous neighbors. And we have a lot of folks that have are from the neighborhood that are now leading programs and, you know, in the neighborhood and stuff. So it's been really wonderful. And the other thing is we've had a lot of really great elders and from the very beginning, one of my buddies jokes that when we started living in community, you got a call from some Benedictine nuns and they said, "We love what you're doing and we just wanted you to know that we're here for you. If you ever need help or want to bounce some ideas around, we've been doing community for about 1600 years." and so I think we've had a lot of wise elders and other communities that have been around for 100 years or, you know, 1600 years. So it's been, that's helped grow some pretty deep roots.
Yeah, absolutely. I know with people who aren't familiar with what you're doing as far as communal living and new monasticism is kind of the movement you're associated with. And if you could speak to that, there's been what seems like a resurgence of it, but I don't know if from your vantage point, do you see that that has already peaked or do you see people kind of getting drawn into this way of living more so now?
Well, I think that folks are really hungry for community. Not everyone uses the language of new monasticism, but I think what a lot of folks realize is that we're communal beings. You know, we're made in the image of a God that reflects this sort of plurality of oneness. And so we have this longing to be one and to also to live in community. And when the first human beings made in Genesis, it's not pronounced really good by God until there's two helping each other, you know, and God says, you know, it's not good for one to be alone. And so that hunger that we see, you know, all through Scripture and Jesus sending the disciples out in pairs and saying, wherever two or three of you gather, I'm with you. There's that hunger in us. And I think in Western culture, we've really sort of lost the art of community in a lot of ways. I think there's a lot of Native folks and a lot of Latin American folks and people in other countries. I've seen community so vibrant. It's how people have survived. Mm. Even in my neighborhood, a lot of neighborhoods that are economically impoverished are community rich because it's how people have made it, you know. I think that it's no coincidence that in some of the richest corners of the world, we have some of the highest rates of loneliness and even depression and suicide. So I think we're made to love and to be loved. And so what I'm most interested in is people finding ways of community that feel authentic to them. And that's the irony in the church, too. We went from these mega churches in the 80s to like, the pendulum swing is towards micro church, you know, and house church and, you know, living the gospel out of dinner tables and living rooms and homes like the early church in Acts. And half the curriculum coming out of mega churches anyway is how to get people into small groups because, you know, it's how to find community. I think that there is a movement that's connecting a lot of these. And what the new monasticism has done, I think, is identify and connect us with a really ancient practice of what we're doing so that we don't have the audacity to sort of think that what we're doing is, you know, we're the first people to ever do this, but really it's how a lot of the world continues to live. And what church has been at its best has been a community of people that are orienting their lives around Christ and around new values too. Mm. So the monastic communities, you know, it comes from the word mono, which is one, to will one thing, to love God with all of our heart. And for some folks, that's meant renouncing all other loves, you know, and seeing God as lover or spouse and taking a vow of chastity or celibacy. For others, it's meant renouncing all of the consumerism and the materialism and the Kardashians and and saying, you know, no, it's not how we accumulate more, but how we stay satisfied with less, you know, and take a vow of poverty and on, you know. But I think what we've done is we said we want to take the spirit of that monasticism and not necessarily all of us will take those same vows, but I think we will honor and cherish those and see what those mean for us today.
And I think one of the reasons why I've heard that you've said sometimes people just show up in your doorstep. They want to know what you're about enough that they kind of, you know, pilgrimage over to where you are at the Simple Way. And I think it's a little bit glamorized for people who don't, obviously it's not on the ground, you know, where you are in real life. But I think from people on the outside, they might think, wow, that sounds really great. I'll feel like I belong. And let me just see what that's about. And they'll actually, does that still happen where people come out to visit and just show up?
Well, since we've got a dozen houses now, I can just send them down the street, you know.
Yeah.
But really what we've wanted people to do is not, you know, overly romanticize what we're doing and feel like everybody's got to come to Philly. But mm-hmm. Mother Teresa had a great line. She said, Calcuttas are everywhere if mm-hmm. we'll only have eyes to see. So she would often say, find your Calcutta, you know. Mm-hmm. And what we're interested in, we are interested in people finding community. And sometimes we don't even know where to start building that. So I think there's a value in learning from other communities. And we've set up a whole network of community of communities on the web. And we've had, you know, a lot of different gatherings to try to connect the dots a little bit. And there's wonderful communities like Reba Place outside Chicago that host gatherings. And there's programs now where we have a program called Mission Year. Missionyear.org, where young people, especially 18 to 30, can live in community for the first year. And a lot of those, it's almost like an internship. They sort of whet their appetite and they you know, get rid of some of that romanticism, you know, realize that we also have to do dishes and, you know, disagree with, you know, each other and things like that. So, but that those are great building blocks. So we still have open houses at the Simple Way almost every month, and those are great on-ramps to come in. But I think what's exciting about that is everywhere we go, there is a conversation about community, but it's more than that. I think it's about a faith that engages the world that we live in, and that is not just a doctrinal statement that you can read on paper, but it's about living differently, you know, and being formed by Christ and the things that Jesus taught so that we live differently in the world around us. And so what does that look like? And I think that sometimes we have kind of a paralysis of imagination. We don't know what it means. We know that we're, you know, Romans calls us not to conform to the patterns of this world, but we don't know exactly what that means. You know, does it mean I can't have a 401k plan? Does it mean I can't, you know, have my own car or whatever? And I think like what our communities can also do is there's so many different forms people can find a way of living that feels authentic and faithful to Christ, because we all do a lot of really different things. And we've got friends now in Philly that have started a free medical clinic. We've got folks that are engineers that are designing robots that can dismantle landmines. You know, I think God wants our gifts and our passions and our skills, and non-conformity doesn't mean uniformity. It doesn't mean that we're all going to live exactly the same life.
Yeah, that is really a practical thing to say, because we can find our own place right where we are, because there's so much need everywhere that we can find a place to be used by God. I know when in 2007 I had known about what you were up to for maybe since your first book, and then in 2007, I saw it was like national news about the fire and everything. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit to what happened there, and then some of the outcomes of really being Jesus in that community for people who were left without their homes.
Sure. So the backdrop for that is, I mean, that was a monumental time for our community and personally in my own life too. I think the house I lived in burnt down in that, but the backdrop of it is that we have 700 abandoned factories and almost 20,000 abandoned houses. Our neighborhood was built, like many neighborhoods, around jobs that are no longer there, and there's a lot of abandoned spaces, and one of those was a city-owned property that caught on fire. And it ended up spreading throughout the neighborhood and burnt a lot of our homes down. Thankfully, nobody was hurt. And what was just mind-boggling was seeing how our community came together, and about 100 families were affected by that. A lot of us were displaced as our homes burnt down. And one of my, the Red Cross set up a shelter, and they came to us and they said, you gotta hear this. This is just, it's amazing what happened. They said, we set up a shelter, but nobody ended up staying in it because everybody in your neighborhood opened their homes up to each other. And so it was a really proud moment. I mean, and over the years we've built now a park, a neighborhood green space, and all these, a greenhouse where we, you know, all kinds of things that we're doing. We helped renovate a lot of the houses that were destroyed. People poured out love, you know, and we are still creating that space. Yeah, if you want to donate, go to thesimpleway.org. we literally saw like several hundred thousand dollars poured out, but also like our whole neighborhood, whether people had money or not, they had hands, and they just began rebuilding this space. And it was funny because one of my favorite moments was, it was a very sentimental journalist that was, or it was a TV camera that was interviewing my friend whose house had almost burnt to the ground. And they said, you must be devastated. Tell me what you're feeling right now. And he just smiled and he said, I got to tell you, we're thankful no one was hurt. And it's been amazing to see our whole neighborhood come together. And he said, and since that old, ugly factory burnt down, we can see the moon for the first time from our block. what a beautiful, like, perspective, right? And when Jesus says, you know, don't worry about tomorrow, and don't stock up your treasure and stuff that moths can destroy, and, you know, rust, thieves can steal, and fires can burn up. Like, you know, it was a beautiful reminder for me, one of my neighbors, of how we're to view the things of this earth.
And it was such a neat opportunity, too, for the community that you've gone in to serve, that, you know, they already probably were generous of spirit, too, but then they were able to offer things to you. And it is really mutual. You know, we think of ministry sometimes as serving, but really all the blessing gets poured back into you. And I don't know that if we don't have this immense need, sometimes maybe we never see that.
Yeah, one of the things that moving into a neighborhood, I moved into this neighborhood by choice, and it is a neighborhood that I'm really proud of, obviously, but there's a lot of struggles. You know, we've got a lot of abandoned buildings, and there's a lot of the kind of replacement industries that came after the jobs left, of, you know, drug trafficking and sex trafficking and things like that. So there's a lot of pain there. But what I think I learned through all of that is that there comes a point where the struggles of the neighborhood do become our own, you know, and there's a beauty in being not just a giver, but a receiver of that hospitality. And it's taken a lot of years to build that. But certainly when my house burnt down, that was a place where all of our neighbors helped those of us that lost our homes. And that's only continued since then. I mean, we keep moving into abandoned houses and fixing them up, and we keep finding neighbors that are really ready to own their own home. So that, I think that momentum, it kind of jump-started something that's continued even now. But there's a saying that I love and cling to, which is, if you've just come to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you've come because your survival and mine are bound up together, then let's hold hands and work together. And so I think that's a corrective to a lot of the posture that we've come in traditional missions and stuff, where we're coming to help people rather than realizing that we're really can't be all that we're going to be until someone else can be all that they're meant to be. And some of us, we end up thinking with the wrong perspective. When my buddy says we're born on third base, but we think we hit a triple. and I think that's true for a lot of us. You know, we think we're something special because we were born into a certain economic, you know, sector. And so I've learned so many things from my neighborhood and from people who may have little financially, but they have a whole lot to offer. And I don't mean that in a sentimental way. I mean, like, literally, we were just talking to some of the young people, and one of the kids was talking about how she wanted to be a lawyer. We said, well, what are some of the obstacles and challenges? She said, well, I've not gone to the best schools. You know, the schools in our neighborhood are struggling. And so there are kids that have had a better education than me. And we said, well, what are some of the advantages that you have? And she said, well, there'll be a lot of kids in law school that actually haven't seen racism firsthand. You know, they haven't seen violence and injustice and police brutality and things like those are the things I've grown up seeing. And so there come, you know, so I think there's a depth and insight that comes that we often miss, you know, if we just think that our gifts come from, you know, books and education rather than some of our life experiences.
How you're living and how you've been living incarnationally is a challenge too to some of us who I don't live in the suburbs, but I think that was like the dream I had one time. I'm gonna have a good job, live in the suburbs, have a nice car, and then you realize that that dream leaves you alone and isolated, and that when you get your hands dirty and get messy and just sacrifice, you know, that that's where in that vulnerability you find your friendships and your belonging. And I think that it's a great lesson that we don't need as much as we think we do, you know, as far as.
Right. I think that's why Jesus says to the rich in this wonderful incident with the rich ruler. The rich ruler comes up and says, what do I need to do to enter the kingdom? You know, he actually says, inherit the kingdom. You know, it's as if like, how do I get some of what this is, you know, almost from an entitlement perspective. And Jesus says, you've got to sell everything you have and give it to the poor. And follow me, you know, and I think the disciples look at that and they're like, my gosh, this is big. And Jesus says it's easier for a camel to fit through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter. And it's not an exclusion of rich folks, but I think he's pointing out something that's very true, that folks that are very independent and self-sustaining, like it's hard for us to get that we need God and we need other people, and we're taught values like independence that are not gospel values. The gospel teaches us interdependence, and it's actually good to need other people and to need God. We're built for community, and a lot of the other patterns leave us, you know, very lonely and very creating idols out of our own bank accounts and Wall Street and all these other things that if they fall apart, then we're left feeling like, where is God in this? Well, God's always been here. Like if we build our hope on, as the old hymn goes, we, you know, our hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. All other ground is sinking sand. And I think we've seen that, you know, no matter what happens on Wall Street, God's still good and we'll still be able to take care of each other. But it means that we have to hope and trust appropriately. So yeah, for those of us that have a lot of resources, that's tricky because you want to believe that we're self-sufficient and independent and all these things. And yet you go, I'm not sure that those are the real values we want to teach our kids.
Absolutely. Well, I'll just finish with this final question because I want you to be able to get back to the rest of your day. But I was curious as to what question do you get the most in these Q&As with youth that you're working with or places where you're speaking? What do you think is the question that you get the most?
What happened to your dreadlocks? No, I'm kind of half joking. The things that you think about are remarkable. But anyway, I get so many different questions, and I talk to so many different groups. It's really hard to pinpoint one of them. But I think that what often I hear is you know, not everybody's going to go to Calcutta or Iraq or wherever, but how can we do this right where we are? And in some ways, I do think we have to challenge our location, because some of the places that we end up are built around very counter gospel values. Like some of sprawl in the suburbs were built around actually moving away from neighborhoods where there's high crime and there's people that don't look like us, and the very neighborhoods where we maybe should be living, you know? And so I think we do need to challenge, but at the end of the day, I think Mother Teresa was right that Calcuttas are everywhere. And really what we're talking about is not massive change the world, you know, moments, but it's actually really living a life that As Mother Teresa said, we're not just called to do great things. We're called to do small things with great love. Mm-hmm. And what matters is not how much we do, but how much love we put into every act. Mm-hmm. So I'm a real believer that part of what we've got to do is figure out what are my skills and passions, and how might they connect to this world's pain and to injustice. So if I'm a lawyer, how can I be a kingdom-minded lawyer? You know, if I'm a scientist, how can I do something that might alleviate the suffering in this world, or, you know, whatever. We even had a plumber that moved in with us, and he came and said, hey, I'm a really good plumber. I just know you're rehabbing some houses, and probably people have some plumbing, so just make me a list of all the things people need help with, and if folks want to learn plumbing, I'll teach them. I'm like, that's amazing, you know? So I think we, no matter what gifts we have, we connect our passions to this world's pain, and we see then that our work gives life to other people, and I think it also gives us a real deep sense of meaning and purpose for God.
Dreadlocks were like a Samson moment, right? It was like they were cut off in your sleep.
I'll tell you the truth about the dread. But it's in Afghanistan, and as I was preparing to leave, they said, "Do you still have your dreadlocks?" I said, "Yeah." And they said, "Would you just consider cutting them off?" And I thought, "Oh, because, you know, it'll make me stand out as an American." They're like, "No, it's actually, we believe that you might be mistaken for Al Qaeda." And I was like, "Dude, grab the scissors, man." So yeah, anyway, so
yeah, you don't want any confusion there, right?
Yeah, let me just make it crystal clear, you know, but you don't want to shave your head too close, because then they might think you're with the military, you know. So I'd have this, so now I've got this very mediocre normal hairdo, and I'm enjoying every minute of it.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I look forward to seeing you in about a week's time, and I'm just very grateful that you would spend a little time with me and chat. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Can't wait. Bless you.
I really hope you enjoyed the show today. Please come by sparkmymuse.com for related show notes and links and all kinds of other information. Don't forget to subscribe, and please give us 5 stars on iTunes.